This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today, I'm super fired up. We've got Scott Brown. He is the president and CEO of Fifth Avenue Real Estate Marketing. This is a great episode.
This is a great episode. Past guest fan favorite, Scott Brown. We actually reached out to Scott again, and there's a reason for it to come back on the show. One, Fifth Ave is super active in the Fraser Valley, but he also has his hands in marketing pre-sale properties in Vancouver.
Yes.
On the island, in the interior. Scott has his finger in many, many markets.
Right.
And his finger on the pulse. So it's so great to have him back on the show to talk about where we're at.
Scott has, he comes on the show almost quarterly. And one of my favorite kind of recurring guests of ours, just because there's always some real takeaways. He's never afraid to put his neck on the line. He makes bold predictions.
He's been doing this for a long time around the world.
Yep.
And he's super insightful.
Yeah, no, for sure. This is a great episode. But before we get to that, Matt, I got to say, we've had a lot of people posting on Instagram, sharing their favorite episodes. We did a bit of a contest. We're going to be getting some shirts, some V-Rep shirts.
We've had
out.
People as far away as Germany reaching out for t-shirts.
Can you believe that? We didn't anticipate.
No.
We didn't anticipate shipping and handling when we made this offer.
No, we did not anticipate that type of shipping and handling.
But it's been a huge success.
But it's flattering. We're global. The Vancouver Real Estate Podcast is global.
And the number one comment is these shirts are really, really good quality.
Signify quality.
Yes, exactly.
Like the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast itself.
Yes, exactly. It's almost a reflection of the show. We want to get you a shirt. So head over to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast on Instagram. You can share your favorite episode, tag us in it. We will repost it and we'll try to get you a shirt out. We've got a list of people that we're working on getting some shirts out to. And I got to say, we ordered 200. We still got a lot left, but man, we should have ordered more medium and larges.
Yeah, a lot of larges have disappeared
and a lot of smalls seem to be hanging around.
Yeah, no kidding.
But this is something I want to read. Friend of the show, a fellow agent out there who will remain anonymous,
right.
But good friend of the show. She reached out to say Dustin Woodhouse should be a voice actor, which
never
on.
Thought of it, but now that she says it.
Soothing. He's like the Barry White of mortgage advising.
Yeah, no kidding. I didn't even think of it, but it's funny. Dustin Woodhouse, I feel like if he wasn't doing mortgages, he could do anything he wants, including voice acting.
He's a bit of a Teddy Pendergrass. number two, she says, Tom Davidoff is a legend. Fat Joe featuring Ashanti, What's Love? Come on now. It's on repeat in my car.
Yeah, that's come up a bunch. It's come up on Twitter. Tom's music choice. Let's just say, yeah, the Halloween party this year was off the charts because of Tom's inspiring music choice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And my daughter now, it's Frozen, it's Encanto, and it's What's Love.
But What's Love, the explicit version, when I showed it to my daughter, I thought, there's probably, some F-sharps in there, you know, whatever.
Like the
opening line. I don't know if you know it, but it's pretty aggressively explicit.
Is Ja Rule in there?
Ja Rule is in there. Ruined by, I guess I said this to you before and you said everyone's always hated Ja Rule, which I didn't know. But the Fyre Festival documentary, which I only watched recently, man, does he come across like a doofus.
You know who I used to get mixed up a lot when Ja Rule and DMX, which I think is a huge
it's a real slander to DMX.
But here's the thing: there's a great Jay-Z. I can't remember where that was. I think it was on that YouTube, The Barber Show. When they interview, it's like an interview show, whatever. It's like a video podcast.
Right.
But anyways, long story short, Jay-Z has some really great story about opening for DMX. And
I remember you sharing this with me.
Or no, going on after DMX. Yeah. That's what it was. Because DMX was like, would be like
growling
in the back, and like every
the whole place would explode.
Yeah. And then Jay-Z would have to follow him. And it's, it's worth listening to. So if you're tuning in, this is about real estate.
If you're still here,
it's not only 90s and early 2000s rap on this show. Matt, what else do we got before we cut to this conversation with Scott Brown?
You know what? I think we just covered it. Random thoughts on live hip hop. Maybe we should cut to Scott Brown, president and CEO of Fifth Avenue Marketing. This is a great conversation. And like I said, really, I think Scott Brown was the first person to come on the show and kind of talk about Burnaby coming the center of the Lower Mainland, which has really shaped my thinking over the years. And I think has totally come true through the pandemic and kind of the flattening of the pricing. He's just got a lot of really thoughtful things to say. So stay tuned and enjoy.
Yeah. And Scott's best area for investment. You're not going to want to miss this.
Absolutely.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Scott Brown, CEO of Fifth Ave Marketing and past guest, fan favorite. Welcome back, Scott. It's you're here almost quarterly, and we're very thankful for that. But for a bit of a market update and a catch up. But how you doing, Scott?
I'm well. I'm glad to be back. I'm obviously a regular listener, so it's kind of nice to take a turn and be a talker.
and Scott, we should say you wear a lot of hats. You got a bunch of stuff on the go, and I'm not doing you justice by just bringing up Fifth Ave. But what else are you doing these days?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because you know at the core we have a common kind of approach and process, but we very much believe that BC is much more regionalized than our sister company in Ontario. So I'm the CEO of Fifth Avenue with a great leadership team. I was a CEO but I'm the founder of our downtown-based and Burnaby-Richmond-based firm, Baker West, whose marketing, you know, include their listing of this, you know, amazing world's tallest passive house that we can talk about later. Right. And then I'm the CEO of our Okanagan-based company, Epic, and we have a very strong president and leadership team up there. And then I'm on the board kind of in a strategic partner to our island-based company, used to be called the Condo Group, and now they're called Island Realm Real Estate. So I cover the province that way, and then we have one team here in our Surrey office who provides shared resources to all four of those businesses, you know, back of house and important admin processes and that. So I kind of float around the province. I keep an office at home, and then I'm in, you know, boardrooms across our entity. So I do really get the privilege of seeing such a great province, but of having my fingers in four interrelated yet unique local kind of sub geographies or markets.
And Scott, you said more regionalized. I don't know if I understand that, but I'm just curious. So is BC compared to Ontario, so there's a difference there?
Well, there seems to be, and I'll explain it in Ontario, for instance, right? I use a beer example, okay? So in Ontario, they have the big Labatt's factory or Molson's in Montreal. And so our sister company, Baker, there does about 6,000 pre-sale units a year between Ontario and Quebec, all under one brand. No firm in our business has been able to be that strong across the entire province of BC, right? And we observed this and went, okay, some people work in them, but there's no local leader supplier who's embedded in the development community on the island. So that's why we partnered with Condo Group and Island Realm. We said, we'll bring our systems process and some developer relationships, but we want people who are in that market every day, who are senior, who can speak to the local UDIs, know the market cold. So rather than having somebody always have to come in Vancouver to drive it, we have local leadership there. We have local leadership. Our president has lived in Kelowna for like 35 or 40 years. So we have local leadership in Kelowna for the Okanagan. And we have our downtown leadership is focused much more on sort of high-rise, mid-market, and upper-market, whereas Fifth Avenue, our staff here and our leadership really lives and breathes the suburban markets in the Fraser Valley. So one common platform, four different brands of beer, all really recognized as local leaders. So that was an intentional strategy for us. And we have clients who work with three or four of them and said, hey, I love the local leadership, but it's a consistent process and experience. So that's important too.
And thanks for using beer so Matt understands.
I've got it down cold now.
So Scott, we're going to...
Now I'm thirsty.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we want to jump into... maybe we'll start with the Vancouver market, but then we'd love to do kind of a tour around the province and maybe even a little bit about Ontario and what's going on in Ontario. But maybe to start things off, how's the market in the Lower Mainland?
Well, you know, it's funny, having been doing this for a long time and then having put out the Fifth Dimension research report for like 12, 13 years, the market to me feels like 2013-14. Okay. So because 2021 was such an outlier and, you know, and the market was going so fast and everything was absorbing, we just took all our sales teams away for both our two Vancouver firms, put them in a conference center for a day or two up at Loon Lake and Maple Ridge. And we said, guys, we have to reset our mind. We have to look at our hearts. We have to look at our process and behaviors, because what got us through 2021 is not going to get us through the next 3 years, right? We got to go back to basics and really, you know, discipline, follow up everything. So there is a good market out there for pre-development. It's uncertain. And then that's probably the one word I hear the most these days is that globally, locally, everything, there's more uncertainty there has been. But there are still demand for new product. The single family market is obviously, you know, more in kind of a, you know, a correction mode, but it's still ahead of where it was a year ago. But, you know, what I expected to see in September, I think we'll see in October, is that month after month, less sales than last month. I think that pattern's going to break itself. I think that we'll sort of, you know, I think we're close to stabilizing on the resale market. Mm-hmm. Although the apartment values have been holding themselves more than the single family has. But I think the one thing about the Metro Vancouver market is developers here they don't break the one sin that I've seen broken globally, where if they don't think it's there or they're uncertain, they don't force it. Okay. So a lot of developers in Vancouver have just said, hey, you know what? I'm going to push my start of my sales of this tower out of Q4 and into Q1 or 2 next year. And I'll know a little bit more about that. And so that on the new side can throw the sales numbers off. And, you know, when that happened the last time? Happened twice. Happened in 2020, obviously, that happened in the spring where people stopped right. And then brought product out in September. But the other time it happened, people forget, was Q4 of 2019. And what was Q4 of 2019? Coming off the heels of all the government intervention in July of 2019, right? The market took a pause, and 2019's total sales were the lowest since the global recession. Now, there were still almost 8,000 homes sold. We're not anywhere near 2019, right? Things have definitely, you know, people are a bit more cautious, but I don't believe that the Q3 and Q4 sales are going to be anywhere near as low as they were in 2019. So I think what's interesting across Metro Vancouver is that, you know what, Surrey City Centre is still pretty active, right? Wood frame products in any market, including Coquitlam, because they're affordable and because of the new interest rates. And that's the thing. You know, we always do our business planning for 2023 this time of year, and we started in August. And I kind of go back and, okay, what did I get right last year and where did I blow it? Where I got right last year was that I expected interest rates to go up and to put more pressure on and create more demand for wood frame and more affordable condominium and townhome product. What I got wrong was the magnitude at which the interest rates went up.
Right.
But the other one was the compound effect of inflation. We literally spent part of this year talking to all of our clients about how much not to sell and hold back until they're 100% sure of their costs. So the cost side's not moving off. So that was a bit of a surprise. So in Vancouver, developers are looking at their costs and going, look, you know, I may not release product until I'm sure of my costs because I can't, you know, if I come out and I need to lower my prices to market, but my costs don't allow me, I'm stuck. So this is a very sophisticated market. And I think people are just taking, some people are taking a pause. And some people on the other hand are looking at hard data and going, no, it's the data is telling me to go forward and sell. But so that's the, you know, this uncertainty, and there's another air of caution in the market. But if you've got affordable stuff right now, it's moving. And that's such a relative term in Vancouver, right?
Right.
Yeah. But the other one that's interesting is so we're seeing this, and you asked about Toronto. So Toronto, the developers normally are a little bit more quick to delay there. But talking to our CEO, Barbara Lawler of Baker, that she's continuing with launches and they haven't really felt that delay yet. Or pullback. Their tower market is doing well, but they released kind of their first ever 2,400 square foot, you know, super luxury, and it's been really well received through this summer and fall. And so I said to her, "Is this a case of there's always a market for a one of a kind and a first of a kind?" And she said 100%. And so that's what Baker here, Baker West, is doing with The Curve, is that our database is growing by 500 or 600 people a week right now who are interested in really the Tesla of condominiums, which is thecurve.ca, the world's tallest passive house. So this is a big experiment of this passive house technology. It's such a weird term, right? Sounds like a place where a bunch of people live and they're not really assertive and they don't really ask.
Yeah, 1967.
But apparently it's not about that. Apparently it's about the environment, that it's passive on the environment. So this is a big experiment. And so it's interesting to see, like Tesla, will this technology and approach to development become mainstream? Because Tesla and electric cars really are now much more mainstream, right? It's not a big surprise to hear somebody bought one anymore, right?
Right.
The big surprise is to hear they sold their place in line.
Because those numbers are, you know, 500-600 a week in this market in terms of registrations seems pretty robust. Is this a case of kind of early adopters, people that are, is it really the passive house that's driving that? Or is it kind of just because like just from thinking of what we're seeing on the ground right now is, I think you're right about potential stabilization here, but open houses are very, very busy right now too. Like we're having tons of people through opens, not so many offers, but tons of people through opens.
Yeah. And so I'll answer that in a couple of ways. First of all, whenever we've been in these cycles before, I always go back and go, okay, so how's the consumer thinking and feeling? The consumer right now is thinking that they're not blind to the fact that these little kind of situations in Vancouver don't tend to last. And if you put yourself 5 years in the future, you know, from today, you're probably feeling much different than you are today. So that is driving a lot of curiosity, but people just want to make sure they're not going to be embarrassed by making a decision, right? And so we all as advisors have to make sure we do a much better job understanding our clients' needs, their risk, their goals. And so it really does, I think, in the resale market too, not you guys, but other people, I think 2021 bred a bunch of bad habits, including not listening to your customer and really helping them make good decisions. But I think, you know, we're back to that again. You got to go back and actually advise your clients, because you can't just say, well, that's going to be gone in a week, so take it or leave it. But in the case of Curve, I think you are right in that it's early adopters, to people who believe that they can live in the downtown, but they believe in that you can live differently. You can have, you know, beautiful architecture So the gentleman, I remember we got the chance to interview the architect, a gentleman named Tom Wright. And it's a rainy night and we're here, but he's in London. He's like 8 hours ahead of us. And it's a rainy night. He's got this candle, almost like a vibe, very chill guy, very humble. And so we said to him, like, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what drew you to this? And he said, well, what I was known for when I did architecture in Dubai was my job wasn't to sell a building. My job was to basically sell Dubai to the world through architecture. And he goes, now my job is to actually help take sustainability and this concept of passive house and sell it to the world. Because this is the first time it's ever being done in a high-rise tower format over 60 stories. Probably, I don't know if it's ever been done above 12 stories. So I think people are very keen to see how that works. And there are always people who are collectors who want to be own the first of or a one of a kind. But I do think you nailed it, is that there's early adopters who, yeah, they want Tom Wright architecture. It's beautiful, right? But they also want to believe and buy into a concept that is likely to go around the world.
Right. Interesting.
I just want to, just quickly before we get to other markets in BC, in thinking about passive house, one of the things that comes to mind is they're really efficient buildings. Does this impact maintenance fees?
Well, you would expect it to, but again, the disclaimer is they have to essentially, early adopters is, yes, it will. But the point is how much they're going to measure. These buildings are going to have, you know, systems and measurements to be able to actually create the case studies to go and talk about to other developers around the world. So it will, especially because, how it regulates, heat and light and use of light. So it's going to be, it's not an experiment in terms of development, but it will create a compelling data set for people to look at.
Right. How about moving around the province a little bit, Scott? So can we talk about some of the other markets, maybe starting with the Okanagan?
Sorry, Scott, it sounds like the big takeaway for me, at least in terms of the Lower Mainland, was October is the stabilizing month, right? Because September was slower than August.
August was better than we thought. September was worse than we thought. I think October, November, we start to see that, until we get to January and stop comparing to 2021, that will always look brutal, right?
Right.
But the month over month, the stat is the stat I'm watching at. What month does sales actually, for the first time in 5 or 6 months, for instance, October, show a bigger number than September? I think it'll be October. Worst case, it'll be probably November. But I think then what we're going to see is that month over month story for the next little while will be flat or up, as opposed to, chasing down, right? And then my point was, in Metro Vancouver, there's still interest in new developments. People are still looking at places in Burnaby. Inventory still moving in Richmond. People have a little bit more time to be able to shop, which means that they can be a little bit less pressured into making a decision. But a lot of what we're seeing, the people that are buying right now are having the 5-year conversation. They're saying, okay, where do I think this will be? And they're not thinking about today. Mm-hmm. I had one of our investors who buys in a lot of our projects, and I sat him down for coffee, because when the market shifts, I spend a lot of time with our clients and a lot of time with realtors, just making sure that I'm hearing as many perspectives as I can. And so I said to him, he goes, Scott, well, you know me. He said, I'm always 3 to 5 years in the future. He goes, I'm not worried about the next 3 to 5 years, because he goes, they can't replace this stuff at the cost that it's selling at today. So, it's an interesting comment. But again, right now, yeah, things are challenging and uncertain, but the long-term play in Metro Vancouver is still very strong.
Right.
And by the way, we don't really have the immigration wave coming yet, right? That's probably 2023. So what's that going to do to? And I don't mean the foreign buyer. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, the immigration wave, right? That there are people who are going to be coming in here who will be citizens and residents who don't have homes, and they tend to move into the more central areas of Vancouver, and then some certain people who are getting older in Vancouver tend to move out more to the suburbs. So that's the big question I'm asking myself next year, is what impact will immigration have in 2023? Because it really didn't impact 2022 at all, from what I can see.
Right. Except, at least in the rental market, I think,
oh,
at
yeah.
least, cause yeah. I was involved in getting something rented, and man, there's a ton of demand, and a lot of those people were pretty new to the country.
Well, here's where I'm glad you brought that up, because I go back to 2008, 9, 10, 11, even 12, right? The reason that the investor left a lot of the markets, including the suburban markets, was because the rents weren't there and the occupancy, the vacancy rates were high. Well, that's not happening this time. So that gentleman I mentioned, the reason he's still buying isn't just 3 to 5 years in the future. He knows there's not enough housing supply for the people who want to live here and have to rent. So the investor has actually not left the building this year. They're just being very, very careful about where they buy and how much they spend in any one project. But we're still seeing active investors at all of our sites. Right. And normally that, like in 2019, that turned off for a bit, right? Because they were a little bit uneasy. But the supply issue is getting worse, not better, even though the market's slowing down.
Right. And you know, Scott, one thing we've talked a bit about on the show, but going back to, you know, working with developers and developers trying to manage their costs in an inflationary environment, A, has that stabilized? And B, I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because we've talked a lot about if building costs continue to rise and interest rates are on the rise in order to fight that inflation, like it does seem like building and the pre-construction market may just come to a standstill, because the market just doesn't support what it costs to actually build something. Like, do you foresee that as a possibility, or are we kind of past, is it the transitory moment that we're kind of moving past? I'm just curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, I'll give you a couple of little anecdotes on that one. We have three developers who had purpose-built rental projects ready to go, like to start financing them and everything. And with the interest rates, that even with the deal they got with some government funding in that, they don't work. So what they did, they converted to for sale and we're going to market, right?
Right.
And we're having success. So there's one in Victoria like that. There's another one in Kelowna like that. And there's another one coming up in Mission like that. So what we're seeing is some developers are switching actually to for sale because they figure there's more certainty there of costs and they're worried about, you know, the debt. Do I think the costs have stabilized? And that's an interesting question because I do talk a lot. I think they're more stable than they were 90 days ago. There will be some volatility, but I don't. So what I think is I don't see them going up significantly. Who knows what will happen with land, but building costs, I don't see them going up significantly in the next year and a half to 2 years, but I don't see them coming down either. Mm-hmm. And so if people are waiting for new people to kind of discount current inventory, I don't think the developers are going to do that. I think they're basically going to just take slower absorptions and take their time to sell. Mm-hmm. Because they can't afford to, right? One of the things, there's a little myth in the market sometimes, and I've seen a lot of real actual pro formas in 20 some years. And nobody's going to feel sorry for a developer. Don't hear that. But the point is, a lot of them don't make as much money as you think they do. And they go to bed every night with a lot of debt on their pillow. Well, can you imagine if you're doing a big tower and you get a construction loan for $150 million and you're going to bed at night, you know, thinking about that on your pillow? So I do think that what we will see is that, and I am talking to some, there's some movement in different materials, but generally I think most of our clients have said, okay, we've seen the worst of probably the cost inflation. You know, they don't know where land prices are going, but they don't see them necessarily going down significantly at all. I don't hear anybody predicting that. I think them seeing flattening, but land is still very expensive, at least in Metro Vancouver. Mm-hmm. But the big question is, okay, so to what you said, what is the effect of inflation not allowing negative downward price movement on new product combined with interest rates? What does I think that mean? I think the condominium market is going to be very, very active for the next 2-3 years. The townhome market will still be active, but the townhome market is probably the one that overshot. Okay. So there was a neighborhood in Langley where 4 or 5 projects were marketing where their townhomes were $1.3 million, $1.4 million. And they weren't absorbing at all. Now they're $1.1 million, $900,000 to $1.1 million, and they're absorbing, plus Langley was getting more than South Surrey values. That's balancing. So there were some things in 2021 that just the math doesn't make sense, but the behavior was there, and now there's a little settling down into that pattern. But you know, it's if you're trying to buy a townhome and you know your interest rate's that much higher, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of people saying, well, I'm not going to get entry-level townhome. I guess I'm going to live in a condominium for a while and build equity. So I think in the suburban markets, I think the condominium market's going to be quite active through the fall and into 2023. I think the townhome market will be a little bit more normal. And again, I go back to 14 led to 15, led to 16. Those were all three pretty solid years for the industry, but they also were good for the consumer. And then things started to really heat up in 17, 18, and then 19, they came screeching to a halt. And then we took that same pattern and squeezed it into, you know, oh, 2020 starts fast. COVID happens. 2021 takes off. 2022 starts fast. And it's been slower pretty much. For some markets, it's been slow pretty much since May or June. Other markets, yeah, you know, surprisingly. Although a lot of the new stuff in the Fraser Valley and that and the suburban markets just turned on in the middle of August, right? We launched another project at Olive Grove Town Center quietly because we weren't sure. Started writing about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and you know, we're 75-80% sold, right? You know, and it's in $700 a square foot, but it's just there are buyers still out there, both end users and but they're tending to go. I think what we have to start doing is looking more, and our teams do this: run the interest rates. And you almost use a mortgage payment to back your way into a unit mix.
Right.
Instead of, right. Right. Because it's going to be, what can people afford?
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Scott, before we get to the rest of the province here, maybe it makes sense to unpack the Lower Mainland and the idea around the condo being kind of the strongest market moving forward. Which sub area do you think is going to be most active? And then also, what price bands are you talking about? Is it mostly entry level?
Well, it's funny because, you know, we used to be able to talk about, you know, starting from $290,000 for a new pre-sale, maybe studio, and like that doesn't exist anywhere right now. But I think where both the first-time buyer and the end user are most active is between $400,000 and $750,000, right? And so that's, you know, and generally, if you're in between $400,000 and $600,000 with a condominium, in, you know, you, which means you typically there have to be, you know, in a more suburban market, a Port Moody, a Coquitlam, you know, out to Burnaby, parts of Burnaby, although Burnaby high rise is definitely, you know, higher end than that, 1,300, 1,500 square foot. But I think all those areas that were driven by COVID growth of people moving out to get ownership and get value, now there's another wave of buyers going out there because that's the only place they can afford it with the new interest rates. So again, the downtown market is kind of this unique jewel. And I think the suburban markets are only going to be further solidified, right? And you're seeing that in Surrey City Center's activity right now. You're seeing that all the way along the future buying. Look at what Langley City is a good example. Okay. 3 or 4 years ago, if you wanted to sell in Langley City, their approach to dealing with some of the, you know, there's a saying that, you know, you're either growing or eroding. And Langley City's core was getting dilapidated, older buildings, rental buildings. And this is not gentrification, it's just modernization. So Langley City got busy and started approving a lot of new projects to basically transform themselves by offering new housing stock. And but you had a discount off the township of Langley by $50 to $100 a square foot. You know, you had a discount against Surrey by 20-25%. And then when they announced that SkyTrain, right, that discount basically went away. And so you're sitting there now, all of a sudden, Langley City, people are buying and investors are buying rental stock because there is a real legitimate SkyTrain station coming there. So all along that corridor, Clayton, West Clayton, along Fraser Highway, all that type of thing is where there's a lot of investment activity and first time buying activity. Mm-hmm. That's going to continue. I do think the other trend, and it's funny having lived in times, different places and worked in California, you know, they always put their multifamily towers a little bit more like Toronto, either on subway or right by the highway. And I do think you're going to see more densification in North Langley by 200, you know, by the highway. I think you're going to see lots of densification along Fraser Highway. I think you're going to see more densification, you know, along Highway 1 where it's possible. But I think people are also going, okay, I still got it. One of us still has to drive. So where can we live near a highway? Because getting to the highway isn't as fast as it used to be. So I think that, you know, anything to do with transit-oriented development is still very popular. But the Delta bus line, like Delta Scott Road, their big plan for Delta, what they want to do along Scott Road there, is rapid bus that will tie easily into both Newton Town Center and into one of the SkyTrain stations in Surrey. That's going to make that corridor more active. So they want to densify. They want towers along there. And they're doing a rapid bus. So that's another area to watch.
And I guess the idea there, or what I'm kind of hearing is, because affordability, at least in right now, is so important, SkyTrain, like transit-oriented development, is often priced at a point where first-time buyers and people that are really sensitive to these interest rates can't necessarily afford, combined with the fact that, you know, at least one person's driving.
Yeah, it can be that. At the same time, I think that there's certain SkyTrains, like Surrey City Center's numbers are still strong right now, even though things gone down, because even though it still costs you a significant amount to buy land there now and development, you know, your price still in the $1,000 a square foot means you can still get a one bedroom, right, at a decent price that people can afford. So I think it's just, the core is going to be much more challenging of Vancouver, the central part of it, where that's where it's either going to push to things like curb or just be rental, because it's hard to make sense of trying to do something for, you know, an average buyer when your cost base is such that you have to be at $2,400 a square foot. So I think the center of gravity of kind of where people live and population is continuing to move east. And I do think, like, you know, New Westminster will benefit from that as well. You know, so it's interesting to see that just that kind of pattern. And yeah, for some people, it'll be living a little bit further away and living, you know, near highway. I mean, right now, Mount Lehman, they're doing a massive redo of all of the access on the Highway 1 from the westernmost edge of Abbotsford to service the growth. And right by that high street, which was originally developed by Shape, it's owned somebody else right now, there's a whole high street village going in there. All the retail's already in, all the walkable Cineplex, Odeon, VIP, and all the pubs and everything, there's no housing base right there. So between there and the other shopping center, there's a, you know, five or six condominium buildings going in, 175 townhomes. And a lot of the people are saying, with that new access to Highway 1, it's a difference between me getting off at West Abbotsford and being able to afford a townhome here as opposed to living in Langley. Yeah, I got to drive a little further, but I don't want to go all the way to Whatcom Road or McCallum when I go home. So that access improvement of the highway is going to make West Abbotsford all of a sudden very, very popular to the priced out of the Langley market buyer. So bouncing around, the suburban markets, just like in COVID where they're driven, there's something else driven them here. It's called interest rates. And so we're going to continue to see a much more balanced market where the suburban markets continue to represent, and I include the Tri-Cities in that, they're going to represent a larger and larger share of the overall volume of new development transactions.
Makes sense.
Right. And then what do you see in terms of, you know, what's happening with the growth? And so it's funny, there's bright spots. So right now, okay, Aldergrove Town Center, bright spot on the market. Surrey City Center, bright spot, right? The Langley Townhome market. Some developers have come back and been able to reprice to market, and they're getting rewarded with absorptions. But one of the other spots to sort of talk about it is Victoria. So Victoria's market was very volatile pre-owned this year and then turned back on, but it started very slow. But there's a number of condominium offerings targeted to more affordable people. So Royal Bay, for instance, there's a first offering in a master plan community, you know, in Colwood, right near the ocean. There's new commercial going in there called the Commons. And that first offering, you know, in 3 or 4 weeks has sold, you know, about 60%, which, by the way, Victoria market is not so sophisticated. I shouldn't say sophisticated. It's more skeptical of pre-sales. Mm-hmm. So you tend to take more time to sell. So to sell in 3 or 4 weeks in these market conditions at over $700 a square foot, half a wood frame building is pretty notable. And there's local buyers being squeezed out of the Victoria market with new access and roads, like the new Mackenzie upgrade, to go, I can do it now. I'm not as worried as I was before about, so they've got their own little suburban action going on. And that market, if you're in the affordable stuff, again, between kind of five and 750, very active. We're seeing the same thing up in Kelowna on Knox Mountain, a project called Eminence, where it's a mix of locals and investors from Metro Vancouver. And it's that same thing of 450 to 700,000, and they're active, right? So it seems to be that that's where both investors and end users feel comfortable right now. And Kelowna was a bit of, we'll go up to Kelowna because you want to talk about that. Kelowna this year, if I had to use a word to describe Kelowna this year, I would call it delay. They're going through, you know, their municipal election, and we'll see where that comes out. But there were a number of larger projects that were set to come to market that, due to the political environment getting very tense, their approvals were delayed, and they either just chose to miss it and miss this year and defer to 2023, or they just simply just stopped and said, until we know what the political landscape is like, we're not going to bring anything forward to city. So this summer, other than last summer was the recreational renaissance, and there were investors and end users everywhere, and everything in the Okanagan was hot. This year, there was demand, but nobody was able to launch anything brand new this fall, largely due to approvals. And so the only thing new that really released was a second phase of a very, very exclusive end user targeted project called Movala. The rest of the market, other than it started off, you know, strong with some investor offerings in the downtown area, the rest of the market was quiet this summer. People were around. A lot of people were away more than normal out of the country for the first time in several years with that pent-up demand. But I think that, you know, more product had it got to market in Kelowna, there'd be more sales. Penticton, there's so much pent-up interest in Penticton. But two or three of the projects that were said to go this year, again, were either delayed or uncertain about their costs and chose not to go. So Penticton is one to watch next fall because the databases are growing, but nobody's got anything on. There's nothing new on the market right now, practically, in Penticton.
You know what? Just we had Frank O'Brien on the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate podcast from Western Investor, and he does the top five picks in BC, which I think, Scott, you've done in the past on our show. But Penticton's been on his list for the last 2 years. And I think the last time you were on, that was one of your top picks as well.
Yeah, it was. It was one to watch. I think specifically was Penticton is next because Kelowna is becoming denser and more expensive.
Right.
And some people, you know, but again, both the interesting thing about why did we invest in Island Realm and why did we invest in the Okanagan and Epic and those local brands is a significant percentage of our buyers every summer, even this summer, are pre-retirement buying or relocating out of the growth that is Metro Vancouver. And those two markets are going to continue, and the island as a whole, because the island as a whole actually picks up people from as far as Ontario who are looking to stay in Canada but live in a warmer climate. So, you know, we think there's tremendous growth coming in the Okanagan over the next 5 to 10 years and on, you know, pretty much, you know, the island all the way up to pretty much Comox. But the interesting thing is, like, for instance, when we were, you know, one of our projects, 15% of our buyers in Victoria are from Ontario.
Huh. Somebody out there is saying, where would you go, Scott, with your money? And it's well, Adam.
But, yeah.
And it's me.
With my money or my lifestyle is an interesting question. Okay. My lifestyle is such that I really, fortunately, my three sons are old enough that, you know, I don't have to be home as much as I used to be. So I absolutely love getting up early in the morning and taking a ferry and working in Victoria for 2 days and then coming back and working in Surrey and then going downtown and then going up to Kelowna for 2 or 3 days. I just love seeing all of our province that way. So I'm kind of torn and I don't want to get divorced. I've been married 28 years. So there's a factor there that as much as I love the island, my wife is not. She'd rather do the road to Kelowna or Penticton than she'd do the ferry. So the ferry's out other than me doing business. But I don't think I'm the only one who's stretching it around. But from a pure investment perspective, I would definitely be looking at Penticton. And there's opportunities as well for affordable housing that are going to come up in Vernon as well. But I think my first one that you know, if I'm looking for early stage growth, I'm definitely looking at Penticton. I think the long-term legs of Kelowna are great, but Penticton would be one where, you know, I think being first in this next wave of new development is going to get rewarded. And the other one is I'm starting to look just outside of Nanaimo, about 20 minutes south to that whole Cowichan and Cowichan Valley, and going, okay, with Langford and all that moving up, and it's not that far away, that area between south of Nanaimo and north of the suburbs of Victoria, it's one of the few places you can actually buy development parcels. I think that area is also going to go up significantly over the next 3 to 5 years in terms of both livability and, you know, also the real estate valuation. So those are probably the two corridors I'm watching pretty closely.
I've had so many clients over the past year or so going to the Cowichan Valley and mostly into the detached market. But it seems like it kind of reminds me of the crowd that was moving to Squamish, call it, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. Like young families, a lot of people that are outdoorsy, they want community and a lot of work from home.
Yeah. I mean, Squamish really, that's what kind of drove it. And then it, you know, the other thing that really significantly benefited Squamish was, let's go back to the Olympics and that road improvement, right? Because that really became kind of that. I used to joke years ago in the report that Squamish is the North Shores of Abbotsford, right? You can do a bedroom community, you can run a small business. There's more and more employment around there than there was before. Like Abbotsford, a lot of people don't realize that about 60-65% of the people who live in Abbotsford actually work within 20 minutes of Abbotsford, right? So it's not like they're all coming into Vancouver to work. The one product type, though, across BC that we can't seem to get because it doesn't make sense for developers, but the consumer wants it. Every time I get involved in something like this or write a research report, I get somebody 65 plus saying, when are you guys going to do some more master on the main, kind of like at Cultus Lake, 1,500 square foot, no basement, single floor living, right? But in a Bearland Strata community, instead of giving me all this condominium stuff, I'm going, well, that stuff would sell all day long, but the developers have a hard time making the numbers work.
Right. Mm. Interesting.
Because the land cost is too high, right?
Right.
You know, I'm just thinking, and maybe this is shifting gears, but it's just thinking about these, you know, these opportunities you're talking about. And you've also highlighted some kind of bright spots and some robustness in some of these presale markets. Thinking back to, I guess, the relationship from between resale and presale, but the idea that we're stabilizing right now, in terms of timing the presale market, if that's something that people are trying to figure out right now, is the play like buy today, don't worry about interest rates for a couple of years and kind of, you know, plan for the worst but hope for the best type situation? Or do you think it's going to be busier 6 months from now in the presale market, or is it kind of we're getting to kind of a down the trough?
Well, there's a couple different things. I'll kind of answer that a different way. What I noticed, and maybe you guys noticed this, because one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and I know I was going to talk to you. There are certain things in the world that have been hammering on the consumer's resiliency, okay? But one of them that I'm starting to wonder about, this last interest rate increase in September, right? After each of the earlier ones, our sales centers and everything and our phones felt and emails fell quiet for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then people kind of digested it. This last time, is the consumer just ignoring it now? Going, okay, it's not good. I'm not happy about it. But are they becoming more resilient to it or numb to it?
It's so funny because we were talking, or I guess on the show over the course of this year, I feel like we used the analogy of getting punched in the face, like the market got, you know, like a jab to the nose, and it doesn't feel like that anymore. That's happening in the last and in October, I guess we're getting pretty close to the next presumable presumably the next rate hike. And I don't think it's going to have the impact that those ones earlier in the year had at all.
No. And, but so from a consumer's perspective, I think they're getting used to it. And I think they're also going, okay, you know, we're seeing these people again going, okay, I need 2 years to save a deposit, right? We're also dusting off some of our old tools that have been improved now, such as deposit loans. And so for, you know, I'll just make a number up, but it's not far off. So I want to buy a condominium. I have 5%, right? I don't really want to do the CMHC thing, but I want to buy now and save. But for $1,700, I can have a company bond me for the other 5% of the deposit. The developer is treated the same way. His bank recognizes it. And now I haven't had to put as much down. And I'm going to save for 2 years during construction because I need to get used to the new interest rate. And I think what people are going to start to do is, some people are going to have to adjust their lifestyle a little bit if they want to own, but they've got time to figure that out and say, okay, I'm going to put a little bit more into a mortgage. So something has to give somewhere else. Or other people are just going to go, this just further defers my decision and I'll continue to rent. Either way, I don't see vacancies going up in the next couple of years. Do you?
No.
Right. So that means that if vacancies continue to go up, and even with the government controls on rents, right, those are what they are, and they may have to move up again. I think the difference is we don't have what we saw in 2008, where the investor just left the building for a while. So there's still investors. There's still first-time buyers. There's new tools to help them. So I think that, again, barring any kind of outlier event, like our little flu bug we had for a couple of years, and I say that facetiously, obviously, barring anything external, I do think that, you know, we're going to grind it out. I got asked to speak to about 250 realtors the other day, just talking about it. And there were two developers there, and the developers were very bullish about 2023. I kind of laughed and I said, well, usually the marketing and sales guy's not, you know, he's more the rainbows and ponies guys. You guys seem very bullish. And I said to them, I said, we're going to have to work hard and it's going to be a grind for 2023. But I think 2024 and 2025, right, remind me of, again, 14, 15, 16. There is sustained demand. You will work harder for it. The market will gradually grow up. Those markets have a lot of merits because you don't have this overheated pressure like we saw in 2021 on everybody, right, including materials. It's actually more sustainable. So I think that our market's gone through an adjustment of 2021, but I actually think it's going to be more sustainable and people will make adjustments and get used to the new reality of interest rates because they can't possibly go back to where they were anytime soon. Agreed?
Yeah. That makes sense.
And you see the weird marketing language or economic language coming up. What did they call it the other day? People should be very concerned if interest rates come down again because it usually means it was preceded by, what did they call it? An economic global accident. And I was like, well, there's a new one. An economic global accident. Like, whoops, I just bumped somebody in the parking lot. And there goes the whole economy. So I saw that one. I was like, I had to read that article. I was like, what the hell is an economic global accident? That's an $8 way of saying crash, I guess.
Scott, maybe we'll leave it there, but we do have the segment, the five wire, five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Yeah, I can. Let's go for it.
The five wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate. Hey, that sounds familiar. Scalina Real Estate is a full service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
Okay. We'll try to change them up a bit, but some of these I'm curious because we know that you're changing every time we have you on the program, but one book you'd recommend.
Oh, great question. Atomic Habits.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah,
that's, and you know what? His email that he sends out every week is fantastic. It's just like bullet points of four things you want to think about. But yeah, James Clear, really good book.
You know, I've listened to that book now about three or four times, but there's almost, it's a good motivator for discipline too. just constant.
Yeah. It explains behavior pretty well. Yeah. So definitely that's one that I've been talking to all our teams about as well. But yeah.
You're on death row, Scott. What's your last meal?
I usually ask this as a different question, but it's kind of like funny. My wife said to me, I used to say, look, I'm preparing in case I get hit by a bus. She said, could you like just describe that as win the lottery instead? Because I don't really want you to get hit by a bus. But so I think you got to go. I'm going to go totally risky here. Okay. Because the restaurants don't do it anymore. So I'm going to come in and I'm going to have like the garlic toast and the Caesar salad, but where they actually do it at the table with the real egg and everything. And you know, that salmonella, do I care about salmonella if I'm death row? No. Okay. So do I care about whether I digest? So I'm going to have that. Then I'm going to stick with the theme. They're going to come out and they're going to do a steak Diane or something. And they're going to fire it up at the table with a flame again. Lots of flames here to end off. You're going out, you might as well go out with a blaze of glory. Right? And then I'm going to have like either a creme brulee or a really, really nasty, like lots of cherries and everything cheesecake. To go with that steak Diane, I think I just put my hand up and I said, I'm going to have a lobster tail with butter on that because I'm not really worried about my cholesterol if I'm death row. And that thing is, you know what? There is no better distribution system for garlic butter than lobster.
This is like the loan that keeps the developer up, and this is what keeps the sales team up.
You tell the market floor we got more time, etc. What are you going to eat next time 2021 comes?
What is something that you've been binge watching lately or a favorite movie recommendation?
Oh, that's a good one. Cause binge watching I'm in like three fantasy football leagues and we're big like NFL fans and don't even want to talk about the Blue Jays. But the point is that I don't binge watch anything right now because I'm on my phone all the time checking to see who got hurt, who made practices, everything like that. But I can tell you that my wife's watching something because I'm watching it on TV. I'm watching on my phone, but I'm sitting with her. And she's into the Gilded Age or something, or the Gilded. And it's actually pretty cool. I just haven't admitted it to her. But it's a period piece from New York and kind of some of the new and old wealth. And the cast is amazing. So I've been watching. I just haven't told her that I actually enjoy it.
That actually sounds interesting. Is it? It's New York based. I like that.
Yeah, it's New York, kind of new money meets old money. And it's, but the cast is super, super strong.
Fantastic. Scott, I know you've worked all over the world and traveled quite a bit. I'm kind of curious, favorite vacation spot?
Ooh. It's a tough one, but I'll give you two different types of vacations. One is if I want to do wine in the museums, Florence, Italy. But my favorite, probably more recreational and wine in that, was actually in Queensland in New Zealand.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And it was just an amazing, they've got a great Pinots. They've got an amazing like hiking and tours, and you can take helicopter tours. If you're a Lord of the Rings fan, you can go tour with where they filmed it, everything like that. So I really love that. And it's very, very chill. It's even more chill than Australia.
Huh? Haven't had those. Florence, Italy, and Queensland. Sounds like you've had a good run here, Scott.
That hasn't been lately. How's Regina?
Well, we got to end on a high note now after Regina. Last question: something that you've purchased for under $1,500 that's changed your life in the last few years?
Oh, that's a really good question. It didn't cost me $1,500, but I bought a new driver this year for golfing with, and I could not hit the thing for a month, and now I just love it. My dad used to joke all the time. He goes, you hit that so well. He said, it's like part of your, he said, do you take it to work with you? Because it's like you're carrying it around all day. It's so close to you. So a golf driver for like $600 or something. But
and I got to ask, because I'm in the market for a driver myself, is it, what brand, what are you hitting?
I'm a TaylorMade guy, so I think it's a TaylorMade Sim 2.
All right.
Well, I'm like I said, I've been putting it off, but looking for a new driver. So thanks for the recommendation, Scott.
You bet. Thanks again, guys, and look forward to hearing you for a couple more months, and then hopefully I can add some new comments the next time we meet. And we won't be talking about the closing note to our listeners. We do, your listeners, we do not want to be talking about any, you know, tragic economic accidents.
Yeah.
See you guys.
Yeah. Take care, Scott.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Scott Brown, CEO and president of Fifth Avenue Marketing.
Always love having Scott on the program, Matt. He's always got great investment picks. You know, like it's just when you've been selling real estate and doing huge rollouts for, you know, massive projects all over BC and Canada and beyond. Right? Yeah. You know, you just have, he has such a strong command on the market, and it's almost like, I think he is very much reviewing areas, looking at stats and looking for gaps in the market, but it's almost like he can just riff, and it's like just dropping gems.
You know, we say it, but Scott proves that experience matters.
Yeah, absolutely. What else do we got before we cut for the day?
What else do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for all things real estate related. We have things like the Livewire. This is our weekly mailer where you're getting stats before anyone else, different types of stats. We got the VIP presale projects, a bunch of them on there. Sometimes commercial presale projects. We got deal of the month. There's no reason why you shouldn't be on the Livewire. We also have, of course, private client services.
Because Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. I should also say that right now is one of the best moments I can think of in recent history to have PCS set up, because the asking price does not reflect the sale price. So you want to make sure that you're getting those sold prices. Also follow us at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast on Instagram. We're giving away shirts. Tag us in your favorite episode. We will repost it. We'll try to get you a shirt out. And we've got some really, really great content coming as well. And Matt, next week, another banger episode.
We're putting so many episodes away. Well, you're going out of town soon, so we've just been stacking them, and it's crazy.
I feel like we're on a real run here.
We are. We're on a real run. And I just want to say, not only about the guests, and this is a plug for the Livewire and the upcoming episodes, stats come out today or tomorrow. Yep. And I think October is going to be an interesting month.
Right.
So with sales and the HPI price index. So stay tuned for that. And of course, sign up for the Livewire if you want to see submarkets as well as those overall stats, but the submarkets and which ones are outperforming.
That's what we love getting into here, and what forms our decisions. So also, last but not least, Corey Wright doing God's work over at Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. That episode with Jordan McDonald, if you have not listened to that episode, head over and listen to it, because Jordan, who is the founder at Fabric,
yeah,
which is one of the more exciting, you know, small to mid-sized development companies in the city right now that's growing exponentially. Jordan is a friend of the show, but also we've been trying to get him to come on our show for a long time. He's been going on the commercial podcast.
He's like a five-timer club there.
Yeah, exactly.
So every second week he shows up for that podcast.
He's told me that he is coming on at some point. We're thinking spring of 2023, we're going to get Jordan on the show. But man, if you want to just get a sense of who that guy is, head over and listen to the commercial podcast, because he never disappoints.
That's absolutely correct. And if you want to talk about that or anything else, you can call me at any time, 778-847-2854, or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we have that Kokomo line, info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. And obviously, the best compliment that you can give us is by sharing this podcast with family or friend that might find it useful. Please help us grow this show. Also, rate us on where you listen to the podcast or on Google at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And if you want a shirt.
And if you want a shirt, you can get in touch and, yeah, share your favorite episode.
Share your favorite episode on Instagram, and we got a small shirt for you.
It'll fit one of your dolls. I don't know. It'll fit something. It'll fit your dog.
Have a good week.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.